Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you for downloading the Radio Today programme with Audioboo. I'm Trevor Dan. Coming later, we'll have Roy Martin's news roundup. But first, welcome to the studios of Siren FM. Now, looking out the window here, you could easily imagine yourself in Marina del Rey or Monte Carlo with all the swanky yachts moored outside in Brayford Pool. But in fact, we're in Lincoln to talk about community radio with Andrew David, who's managing editor of the station and also chair of the Community Media Association, which represents community stations across the UK. Thanks for having us, Andrew.
My pleasure.
And on the line, joining us from the equally prestigious studios, I'm sure, of Jack and Breeze and as many stations as you can think of in Bristol, is Richard Johnson, who's the group creative director of Cellador Radio. They bought another station last week and seem to be proving that the commercial radio sector is still good business. Hello, Richard.
Hi, both.
I'm going to start with you because you teased us last week. We said to you, what's the game plan for your new station, Total Star? And you said, well, maybe Breeze, maybe Jack, maybe neither of those. You were a bit of a tease, Richard. Have you made a decision yet?
Well, there was no intention to tease. the one thing that is for certain is that it has to have at least 7 hours of local programming because it sits in a new Ofcom approved area compared to the other stations we've got. So definitely 7 hours local, and we're still debating the merits of the Breeze or Jack. We're 99.9% sure it will change from Total Star.
What's the plan for Cellador? It looks as though you've very tactically and surely and strategically set out to own the South and the Southwest. Is that about it?
That is one way of putting it. We had a stated plan that we would like to build a big local radio group south of the M4, which worked until we bought Swindon, which of course north of the M4, and now buying Cheltenham, which is again north of the M4. Geographically, we concentrate in the south, and we've looked at most stations in the area, and some of them are obviously not for sale. Others are for sale at too high a price. When something comes along that is strategically and geographically right for us and at the right price, then that we do a deal.
Of course, we look at Global, don't we, whose ambition seems to be to create national brands and to not really worry much about local radio. And on the other hand, we've got Bauer saying, no, well, we understand passion, but we also understand place. What's the idea? What's the editorial idea of Cellador Radio?
Well, I'll give you a statistic first. In fact, I'll ask you to guess a statistic.
Go on.
If you look at all the local radio stations in the country, if TSA's sub 150,000, so, you know, a large town, what do you think the average weekly reach of those stations in radio sub 150,000 is?
Let's start with Andrew David from the CMA.
Well, it's very interesting because the TSA for Lincoln especially, so there's a commercial radio station here, is 100,000 in this area. What's local reach? Well, I know what the BBC's is, so I won't go for that one. I'd say...
And we're not talking BBC, just ILR.
ILR, oh, I know. Let's say 25.
I'd go a bit lower than that. What's the answer?
See, most people do go low. Most people go, I don't know, 15, 16, 17. And the answer is just over 30%.
Good Lord.
And without being rude, it's probably not because of the exceptional music choice or the world's best presenters. Primarily, one would presuppose that it's because they're local. And taking that as a sort of start point and realising there's a great advantage of being local, and because the stations we've got, a lot of them are very small and we've just bolted them on to other stations to make bigger TSAs, is that we will try and deliver music and jock speak and production and promotion at a sort of regional level, and then locally deliver news, traffic and travel, weather, maybe a bit of what's on information, bizarrely adverts, which are not regarded as local content but can be fantastically important if you suddenly discover by listening to the radio that, I don't know, Nando's is coming to town or the circus is arriving or whatever it is. And so that local content is delivered within a sort of regional radio service.
Now, I can see why Global would be one of your competitors in the, if you like, standard commercial radio area. Do you ever think of community radio stations as being competition as well?
Certainly not directly. I mean, they are competition in the sense that they take the revenue from my children's mouths. So you know, they're fighting in the same pool for revenue, but they can do things on a micro level that we just couldn't do, and they also offer a breadth of programming that, you know, even if we wanted to, wouldn't be able to match.
Andrew, get your hands off Richard's Children's Weetabix bowl and come back on that, because you don't make any money, do you?
No, most community radio stations have to break even in some way or other. It's a very tough market. I don't need to tell Richard that. One of the things that you're quite right that we do is to provide an opportunity for hyperlocal radio. I mean, hyperlocal television may or may not make it. Hyperlocal radio certainly does. And this localism, I'm fascinated that you're saying that the success of the smaller commercial radio stations is down to localness. Absolutely. And that's the fundamental thing that a community radio station can do. Now, there are some examples in the community radio network of where they're offering all sorts of magical packages, like 99 adverts for £99, that sort of, you know, £1 a shot thing, which of course doesn't make any sense in Celidor's case, but makes a lot of sense when you have to pay your business rates, or you have to pay your Ofcom license, or you have to pay your PPL or MCPS or PRS license, because those are the real challenges facing many, many community radio stations. I think the strength of community radio is that it has this level set above which it can't really jump. And in some areas, such as the Lincoln area, when we were going for the license, we went into a voluntary arrangement with a commercial radio station here that we would not take adverts, and we were strictly not for profit. Because, of course, within this area, Lynx FM and Lynx FM Group have been here for a number of... We would never have stood a chance of getting any decent advertising.
Just remind us what the rules are, you know, in a couple of sentences. How much money are you allowed to make?
It's 50%.
So, and that could be sponsorship or advertising if you wanted it to be.
I think so, yes. And the rules are all up for grabs at the moment, because everybody knows that DCMS is doing this look at. There's no green paper for us to look at. It seems to be leaping straight to a white paper. There is a community radio order which can be changed before the big white paper comes out. And we're obviously working very closely with the DCMS on making sure that, to a certain extent, and don't get me wrong on this, Richard, sometimes community radios have been the little minnows that commercial radio stations have wanted to gobble up in order to get a foothold in a particular area. So to make it unattractive financially for medium-size or larger-size operations to try and gobble us up when the licenses come up, that's why we have the 50% cap.
Richard?
I look at our markets. I mean, in Bristol, for instance, there is two community radio stations who, certainly with one of them, we have a relationship with, but we don't really cross paths or see them out much or meet them outside of clients, you know, pass each other in the corridor. I think where it gets interesting for us is if you look at Warminster, which is a license that we own, which is, in fact, currently up for reapplication with Ofcom. Warminster has an MCA of 18,000, which makes it the smallest MCA in England. And it's up against a station called Warminster Community Radio, which exists in that town. And that would be the place where I would most likely say there would have been an issue. But there's not. It's because they're just so fundamentally different.
Because back in the day, I mean, I can remember when I was at EMAP, now Bauer, the leadership of that company at the time, and I think some other commercial radio groups lobbied very hard against community radio, didn't they? For the exact reason that you just said, which is that they were going to take food off your table. Are you saying now that actually even a small group like yours is pretty happy to coexist?
I can't think of a single time that it's been an issue. Not one instant where it has been an issue.
And of course, the other thing, Richard, is that a good quality community radio station could be the nursery slope in which you find your next level of DJs or whatever, because there are very few places in the old days. In fact, when Trevor and I used to work at BBC Radio Nottingham, you could literally go in and make the tea. So that's where you could start your BBC career. And there have been people who've gone from making tea to working with Terry Wogan. But that doesn't exist anymore. But community radio, run in the hyperlocal sense that it is at the moment, does enable us to tap into a talent who would never, ever have thought of getting in front of a radio control panel and might find their way through operations like yours into bigger operations and maybe into network radio. And it's a fantastic opportunity. And for you, of course, it's free.
Where are you finding your presenters these days, Richard?
Oh, cardboard boxes outside Temple Meads, you know, usual place we've all been. What has helped is as commercial radio has contracted in the number of different services available, it means lots of good people find that where there were three stations, there's now one, and certain people have to leave. And we've just gone along picking people up. I have to say, I can't think of anyone we've homegrown at the moment, but then again, we're only, you know, 3 or 4 years old. And I think the really surprising thing for us is that we felt that there would be a glut of presenters. But I think as the industry has got tougher and people have found it harder to make a living, and actually, you know, even if they're at the top of their game, the living often isn't that great. I think a number of people have just left the industry, never to come back.
I want to talk about presenters not so much joining as leaving in a minute. This is the Radio Today programme with Audio Boom.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audio Boo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audio Boo, sharing voices with the world.
I'm at Siren FM with Andrew David, the managing editor of this station, also chair of the Community Media Association, and Richard Johnson, group creative director of Celador, is joining us via ISDN. Last week, of course, James Whale was famously removed from the LBC schedule and not allowed to say goodbye. I just wonder, as station managers yourselves, what would your policy be? I mean, Andrew, if there was a presenter here who just had to go, would you give them warning, or would you march them out at the end of their last but one show?
It depends on the circumstances. That sounds like I'm hedging my bets. The thing about our station here is that it's for 9 to 24 year olds, and we have a very strict policy of no swearing, no bad language. Has to be legal, decent and honest. They have to sign a voluntary agreement. We give them full thorough training, and we mentor them all the way through the process. So hopefully they would not get to a point where they had to be removed. We do have a warning system, and we always drop into programmes on a completely ad hoc basis, so they never know when they're going to be listened to. Most of our programmes, of course, are during the day because that's when the youngsters are available, and therefore I'm in the building. I have had to take somebody off air, but I did it gently off air. It was a circumstance which I'd never had before, and it was where they were just not doing what we would say. There was nothing illegal, decent or dishonest about it. It's just that they were not complying with what we actually wanted. 4 years later, they came back through the door, a redeemed person, and we had them back on air. And because we don't pay them, you know, we can't wave a stick, because the thing a volunteer will do is walk off and find somewhere else to go to.
So what do you do, Richard, when somebody's contract is coming to an end and you don't wish to renew it?
I think with presenters, it's the same as almost any staff who work in a radio station or any business, that some of them, you want them out the door and give them a cheque and say, thanks very much, off you go, goodbye. And others, you say, here's how it's going to go. In an ideal world, it would be nice if we could all stay working together forever. That's not how things are going to work out this time. Let's not fall out. You can carry on and work to the end of your contract. We'll leave on good terms. And hopefully, you know, we'll all be grown up about this, and hopefully there'll be an opportunity for us to work together in the future.
It must be a horrible thing, though, mustn't it, for a presenter to not be able to say goodbye? It's a kind of coitus interruptus sort of thing, isn't it?
Well, is it really?
If you get my feeling.
Yeah, not sure that I want to, but I know where you're going.
You know, I don't want people crying and, you know, a big palaver on air. I just like them just to go, and, you know, the next day something different carries on.
Well, of course, the thing is, Richard,
and if they are going to cry and make a big palaver on air, I sort of don't want them on air.
Well, you see, Richard, you and I could throw it back at Trevor to say, of course, in the days when you and other colleagues were reshaping Radio 1, there were some fairly momentous ones, weren't there?
That went very well, didn't it? Yes, that's your template, mate. I think my best moment actually was at GLR a few years earlier when Matthew is the manager, and he decided that Nick Abbott's breakfast show was not what we were looking for. And Nick being the kind of person he was, Matthew decided that he should be allowed to leave on a Thursday, leaving the Friday show with no presenter. And then he said to me, I think you'd better do it, which I think meant, you know, you're the one who's going to sit there and take all the brickbats from the people ringing up saying, where's our Nick Abbott gone? It wasn't my fault at all.
But well, Friday is a spectre, isn't it? Because the Chris Evans thing happened on a Friday, didn't it?
It did, yes.
And on the same sort of watch. Well, I mean, I think the thing is, I don't know whether, Richard, you buy this. You will know from a long way out as a manager when you're going to have to reshape, and therefore you manage the exit strategy. And it's the same way with a volunteer. I will manage the exit strategy. I would never ban them for doing the, I will actually simply say, look, let's look at a fixed date when you can say goodbye and you can work towards it. And quite often what I will find is they will then find their best bits, find the best presenters and the best interviews they've done, and put together a nice salutary thing, which is a great listen. And that's happened on a couple of occasions when people have moved on by mutual consent.
Let's just move on to something else, if we may. Richard, Celador Radio, has, as you were saying, has grown and seems to continue to grow. Have you got there yet? Or what's the ambition for the next few years?
We're not there yet. We're very lucky. Paul Smith, who is the chairman and sole shareholder of Celador, even though he's the only person I know who's won an Oscar, and even though he developed the world's most successful television quiz show format ever, if I'd done that, I'd just stop. It's fine.
But this is millionaire you're talking about.
But he is passionate and has always wanted to be in local radio. And Paul has been applying for ILR licenses for 21 years, and this is his... This is his big passion, and Paul spends, for a very busy man, a lot of time on these radio stations and is fully involved. He's not, you know, an absentee landlord. And he wants to grow it into something that is profitable, that he's proud of, and that is a successful brand.
Because I think some people look at your business and they say, well, hang on a minute, the bigger groups seem to want to get bigger and bigger. Where is the niche for the small groups, you know, the Quidems? Will they survive, do you think?
Oh, I think there's always room and money. You can be second in a marketplace and still do very well. And that's not just in radio, that's in every business. I'm sure if I quote an example, I'm obviously going to get it wrong. But if I was going to say Pepsi Cola, I'm sure they make lots of money. I'm sure Coca-Cola makes slightly more. So, I mean, I think, you know, there's money around for secondary or tertiary radio stations. And, you know, you can still, on a local level, lots of local stations are number one in their market. And as soon as you've got a weight of listeners, there's money. And if you haven't got the millions and millions and millions of hours that the Globals and the Bowers have got, all it means is you get just less money. You know, there's a fairly straightforward equation that you could apply to it and say, you know, a million hours is worth X pounds. And as long as we get that sort of listenership, we'll get this sort of revenue. And is there a business end? Cut your cloth accordingly.
And Andrew, where is community radio going? I mean, you've lost one or two, haven't you, that haven't been able to sustain themselves in the market?
Yes, and we have to hold our hands up to say that sometimes, you know, it does go the wrong way. But the thing is, this year the CMA conference is celebrating 30 years of community radio. 30 years, not 30 years of the present sorts of licenses. They're 7 or 8 years old, of course. We are, or at least Ofcom, are handing out more and more licenses. It's over 200. They're aiming for 250. If we have two or three that drop by the wayside for all sorts of reasons, and quite often in community radio, it's because of the dynamic of the people who are involved, and the people who start it then move on or move away. There are bits of changes, all sorts of things change, and it sort of re-emerges. Sometimes it doesn't re-emerge, and we have to hold our hands up and say, no, it's gone. But 30 years of community media, and particularly community radio in the United Kingdom, is something that we're going to celebrate in Salford in the back end of May and early part of June for a 2-day conference. And so I'm very positive, because the passion, in fact, Richard, you were talking about, you know, your owner being passionate. That's the thing about local and community radio. It is fired up with people who are passionate about making radio for the people that they can see when they walk out in the bus stop. And I think that's the clue as to the survivability. people actually like to listen to something that's local. You talk about the bigger groups, and I'm not going to diss them because I've sat on committees with them, but that is national commercial radio by the back door. And in whatever group I'm listening to, I actually want to listen to a station where the jock is actually experiencing the same rain that I'm driving through on the M1 through Sheffield.
OK, Andrew, Richard, thank you. Don't go away, because I'm going to reintroduce something that we used to do on the old Radio Academy podcast, which is I'm going to ask you what you've been listening to. I'm going to ask you to pick a show that you've heard recently on any radio station that you would recommend people listening to this podcast to check out. While you're thinking, though, here's Roy Martin's roundup of the radio news this week.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you, Trevor. The big news in radio at the moment is the continuing takeover of Real and Smooth Limited by Global Radio. Several radio companies have come out with their thoughts on how they should handle the Competition Commission's suggestions. Bauer, their biggest competitor, thinks the easiest solution would be to sell the lot. Of course, presumably, because they'd like to buy some of the stations. And anonymous competitor B thinks the same. We don't know who competitor B is, but by looking at the public responses and working out who's missing, you might be able to work it out. UTV. Global Radio has also submitted a response. Their proposal is to sell Real XS in Glasgow and Manchester, along with Gold in the East Midlands. Quite crazy, because the Competition Commission said it doesn't consider Gold to be a problem, so it looks like the negotiations are just getting started. And it's going to be a bumpy ride. Also this week, Dominic Byrne, beep beep, is back on Breakfast Radio after leaving Radio 1 with Moyles last year. He's turned up at Capital reading the news on London Breakfast. It's handbags at dawn in Coventry as both Punjab Radio and Touch fight for the upcoming licence renewal. We'll bring you news of the winner on radiotoday.co.uk within the next 3 months when Ofcom announce a decision. It's like the old days. And former Atlantic 252 jock Niles Mahoney, better known these days as Brian McCall, has started doing audio and video interviews with radio folk about how they got into radio. We caught up with Brian and asked him how that came about.
All right, well, basically, I was at a radio workshop in Belfast, and I was chatting to a chap that worked for Downtown Radio there, and I was asking him how he got into radio. He had a good story. I thought to myself, that'd be interesting to find out how other people got into radio. And I got in touch with some people I know, put a piece of audio together, decided it sounded all right, slicked it up a little bit, put a gloss on it, and that became how they got into radio.
That's your lot for now. We'll speak again next week. Back to you, Trevor.
Thank you very much indeed, Roy Martin, editor of Radio Today, and this is the Radio Today programme with Audio Boo. I'm Trevor Dan. Let's go back to our guests and find out what's been tickling their audio palate recently. Shall we start with Richard Johnson from Celador?
Typically, as a radio person, finding time to listen to stuff is almost impossible. And if I'm travelling anywhere, and I travel back to Southampton or to Basingstoke or whatever, I spend most of the time on the phone. But I have found time to listen to a man that we have just signed to do a Sunday show on Jack FM in the Solent region, which is the Sony Award-winning Graham Mack.
Oh, well done.
So he will be starting this Sunday.
Genuinely so new, and not only one, I think.
Two, I think.
There you go. No, very good. And it will be very good to have him back on air. Well done. And Andrew?
I'm going to be shameless. We have a series of programmes on Siren FM, which are put together by Level 3, i.e. graduating journalism students. It's a unique project for which we were awarded an award by the BJTC in our first year. It's called City Vibe. These are 19, 20, 21-year-old trainee journalists who put together a PM-style Friday programme between 5 and 6 every week of the two terms that they're in university in their last year. A couple of weeks ago, they absolutely astounded us because, sadly, just before Christmas, one of their colleagues died very suddenly. It's a 21-year-old lad who was just about to graduate. They were faced with either just doing an ordinary programme that they dedicated, and it's a news magazine programme, or to do something a bit special. All I'm going to suggest is you go to Siren's website, sirenonline.co.uk, top right-hand corner, it says City Vibe. Click on that. 60 minutes of the most stunning radio I have ever heard, almost without exception.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much, Richard. And thanks for all the kind comments about last week's inaugural Radio Today programme, which we're still receiving, I'm pleased to say, by email to the site or via Audio Boo. This has been a TDC production by Jamie Taylor, and we'll be along with more next week.
The Radio Today programme with Audio Boo.